Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Religion has been part of the human experience for as long as anyone can figure out. Religious behavior in general has declined in many parts of the world, but it tends to bounce back when there's a tragedy of some sort. And recent computer models suggest that religious beliefs are unlikely to disappear anytime soon. So what else could computers tell us about this deeply human phenomenon? Wesley Wildman is professor of philosophy, theology, and ethics at Boston University. He's executive director of the Center for Mind and Culture, and he was the principal investigator of the Modeling Religion Project, which wrapped up earlier this summer. Wesley, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
I have to ask, are you yourself religious, or what got you interested in this topic?
The interest in the topic comes from religion being fascinating. I am personally religious. I'm a religious naturalist, which means that I don't think there are supernatural beings or anything like that. But I think that religion refers to the depth and wonder of life, and I take that very seriously. It's a part of the way I think about myself and my moral formation and the way I raise children and everything else.
So what do you think that computers can tell us about religion as a psychological or a social phenomenon? What can computers figure out about this that we can't figure out for ourselves?
Well, when we're using computers, we are figuring things out for ourselves, but we're doing it in a different way. We're trying to take seriously the fact that religion occurs in a complex adaptive social system. It's a very tangled system with all kinds of causes, and we get insights into that system from individual disciplines in the university, like psychology or economics. But putting all of those causal pieces together is what computers are so very good at. So basically, we're using a computational model as an artificial or a virtual system that is complex to model a real-world complex system. And that gives us a way to experiment with ideas and test hypotheses and maybe even try out policy options before you implement them in the real world. So that's what computers do for us.
What kinds of systems are you modeling? Are you modeling the human brain? Are you modeling society? What's actually in those models?
Mostly we model social systems. So we might look at mutually escalating religious violence, where you get this ratcheting up of violence between two different religious groups, as happened in the Gujarat riots in India. Or you might look at the process of secularization, trying to understand how it is that people stop being religious or stop identifying as religious or stop praying or attending church or things like that.
That one is particularly interesting to me, and one of the recent publications to come out of this modeling project was asking a really interesting question, which we often ask, you know, how prevalent is religious behavior or how prevalent are beliefs? But instead, this was asking how prevalent is atheism and why aren't there more atheists? So what did the models have to say there?
It turns out that atheism is a hard thing to produce in a widespread way. There's always been people who don't believe in the traditional gods of their people. You know, you've got your soapbox atheists and your village atheists and your highly intellectual philosophers. But they have the distinction of being so very rare, and mostly atheism hasn't caught on broadly. The conditions necessary for atheism to catch on broadly are really interesting. For example, you have to have high education, you have to have freedom to vote with your feet, to do what you want, to affiliate or not affiliate with religious organizations without paying any special penalty, economic penalty or something, social penalty. You have to welcome diversity of ideas, and you have to overcome the problem of the deprivation conditions that seem to keep religion so very alive. So you have to have all of those conditions present simultaneously. What's unique about the computers in this case is that we're able to synthesize those theories into a complicated architecture, which you can put into a model, into a computational model, and then run that system to see how well it mimics the real-world system that we understand from experience.
So then flip that on its ear. What are the conditions that lead to or support more religious behavior?
Take away any one of those four conditions that I just mentioned, and at least in the model, religious involvement, religious behaviors tend to increase.
I mean, it's almost like that's the default state in human societies.
Yes, and there's good reasons to think that there's a biological basis for that. In cognitive science, the experiments conducted on human beings make it clear that we fairly easily accept the idea of supernatural forces or religious explanations or gigantic cosmic stories that help locate our own lives in a larger story. And because we're, I guess you'd say, cognitively bent that way, religion does come very easily to us as a species. And that's ultimately the reason why religion has been found in pretty much every culture that human beings have ever had.
One really interesting thing that your research and others have pointed out is the power of disruption, whether that's natural disasters or, I guess, political disruptions, whatever, how that drives people to religion.
Yeah, and in a couple of different ways. There's this beautiful longitudinal study being conducted in New Zealand. It's called the New Zealand Attitude and Values Survey. It's a longitudinal cohort study, so you've got the same people involved in wave after wave of the study, and they've done really well at keeping those people engaged. And they had these people interviewed and data collected on them both before and after the Christchurch earthquake a few years ago. And what they noticed was church attendance picked up dramatically around Christchurch in their population after the earthquake, but after about a year, everything had reverted to normal. So it seems that threats, either natural disasters or invasions or threats of infection or unwelcome immigrants, all kinds of things like that, can spur people's religious interests, religious needs, and they turn to religious communities and organizations for support in those times. But after those problems decrease, then so does the involvement in religion, at least in secularizing contexts like New Zealand.
That kind of support obviously has a benefit to the individual and maybe to the whole society, but religious involvement has also repeatedly throughout human history been used to justify intergroup discrimination and violence. Why? What are the conditions that would push a religious group from supporting each other, providing benefits to one another, to something violent and destructive?
Yes. Religion's definitely a double-edged sword, and quite literally in the way it's come down to us. I think in our time, we see religion doing all kinds of things, both good things and bad things. And the way it's appraised really depends on your perspective. I've got lots of humanist and atheist friends who think that the only way human beings are going to survive is if religion is completely marginalized and has no control over ordinary human behaviors. I suspect that there are forms of religion that could work quite well because religions help with things like moral formation and the building of character and the preserving of wisdom that causes leaders to make better decisions more efficiently. So it's a real mixed bag. Unfortunately, I wish it were otherwise.
Well, and one study within your modeling religion project actually looked at the role of religion within societies, say, the Roman Empire or, for that matter, modern America, how these large societies build and then collapse and whether religion might play a role in those processes.
Yes, one of our models includes a destabilization parameter, so you can simulate the occurrence of a major disaster, such as an ecological disaster or a major infectious disease that kills millions of people or something that collapses some of the infrastructure of modern societies. And when that happens, the model completely reverses itself and goes back to a dominant religious social situation. So we can actually make the model go in both directions. And the simplest way to revert to a dominant religious environment where most people are supernaturalist and maybe even superstitious is to have a major calamitous disaster that forces civilization to reorganize itself.
Does that suggest in some way that, in fact, humans need religion? That, in fact, this idea that the only way for human society to survive will be by eschewing religion may be completely wrong, and that in fact we're going to need religion in order to survive and withstand potential disasters.
Mm. I think we do need religion, but not the kind of religion that focuses on in-group identity and is so easily twisted into racist agendas or other kinds of things that are so negative for a welcoming, healthy society.
A lot of what you're saying, I think religious individuals have intuited regarding the benefits of religious behavior, but in many cases also the double-edged sword and the potential risks. What is added by having a scientific understanding of religion and the role of religious behavior in society?
That's a great question, Heather. The fact is that a lot of people have seen a lot of these things. The insights that people have from their various studies and experiences are multifarious. They point in all kinds of different directions. What we don't really have is a consistent way to coordinate all of those insights into what counts as a large theory that we can then test. And what we do when we build computational models of religious societies is forge those integrated theories from all kinds of different insights, including the ones we've been discussing in the last few minutes. You put those things into a computational model and then test to see whether the theory makes any sense. You actually get a chance to use computers to see whether the synthesis of all of those insights is coherent. That's a real achievement. That's something new. Even synthesizing those theories before you put them in the computer model is something that's not often done because it doesn't belong to any discipline. You have to take cognitive science and psychology and sociology and economics and philosophy, all of these disciplines together. No one does that. And so the computational model actually forces you to look at everyone's insights across disciplines. It's a very different type of intellectual work, and it doesn't have a natural home anywhere in the university.
Wesley Wildman is a professor of philosophy, theology, and ethics at Boston University, executive director of the Center for Mind and Culture, and he was principal investigator of the Modeling Religion Project, which wrapped up this summer. Wesley, thank you so much for talking with us.
Nice to be with you, Heather.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. You can always connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.